you very much, Honorable Kotsi. Any seconder to the petition?
I think the chair, maybe the first and the last time, I second the ANC motion. It must be recorded.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Then we have the Department of Tourism. I was advised that there is DCG Victor Tarake. Am I pronouncing correctly? Can you introduce your team?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Victor Tarake. I'm the Director General of the Department of Tourism. And with me is Ms. Van Kerk, who is our parliamentary liaison person in the office of the DG. Melanie, who is the parliamentary liaison person coordinator. And the Chief of Staff, Sango Verna, and Kwalicha, who's in our office as well. So these are mostly people that are in Cape Town and Pretoria.
Okay. You'll do the presentation, and as usual, members will take turns to engage the presentation, and you'll answer as a team. The next department is led by Mrs. Pumelele Higgins, and can you introduce yourself and your team?
Good morning. My name is Pumelele Higgins from the Department of Science and Technology. I'm the director in the unit of Africa Foundation. I'd like to apologize for some of one of the VSPs representatives here to be in another meeting. And also apologize for my staff for not being able to have an engagement.
So you are virtually alone, or you're virtually lonely?
Yes, alone.
Okay. Cannot be. Then you'll do the
Yes, I'll do the presentation, but I'd like to apologize up front that I don't have a written presentation, but I can provide that.
Okay. Honourable members, our issue stands at that. Let's quickly introduce our members here.
Oh, myself, I'm Eric Afatina from the Department of International Relations. Just here just to represent the Department to oversee the inputs from Africa.
In fact, yeah, and you've done a good thing because the department is actually religiously here all the time when we have the presentations here. The honourable member, there is honourable member Osaope.
Can we introduce Chair and Department? I'm Honourable Mkhalipi, member of this committee. Thank you, Chair.
Morning, everybody. I'm Tan Meke, Muslim of the day.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Peri Khatebe, the chief of the committee.
Good morning, Dumela. My name is Dineo Deli Raputi. I'm the member of the committee deployed by the ANC at NGO.
Thank you very much. I'm Siposelwe Masango, chair of the committee. Masiba Mbenlapo, then we have our colleagues from the committee. DG Koikole. I'm the accounting officer.
The real Wakoi.
Proceed, DG.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members.
And thank you for the opportunity. We will not take too much of your time at all. When we received the invitation, our take was, this is something that we have already gone through. Our take, Honorable Chairperson, is that the bill that is before Parliament was a product that has gone through the executive as a collective in the form of cabinet. And it received the approval, not just the concurrence, the approval of cabinet to say that it is ready. Then it can go through the processes of the Leader of Government Business so that it can actually get into the parliamentary domain. So as a result, we fully support the bill, and we have had an opportunity to look at it. And we of course had some questions to say, but Parliament wants to hear us. So our reflection was perhaps it could relate to other processes that may have been in the public domain previously. A case in point would be the immigration regulation, as an example. And what we then observed was that obviously there is a difference between the manner in which regulations within government get to be handled as opposed to the manner in which yourselves as the lawmakers process the decisions. Regulations would normally then go through the particular department which will derive whatever powers that it would be putting into those regulations from a law that would have already been passed, which means you would have already empowered them to do as such. So regulations would then ordinarily not go through cabinet.
Sorry.
Regulations would then not necessarily go through cabinet, but would go through a process of public gazetting, and subsequently, if there are issues that need to be raised, there would then be processes of commenting to those and so on and so forth. But we see this particular process as a process that we have had an opportunity to participate in, to make an input in, and we do not have reservations as such. At a stage where we were making these preparations, I was even suggesting to the colleagues that that might actually be our submission, and we could actually save most of your time. But we did prepare some few slides, which would then contextualize where do we fit in the scheme of things with regards to the work that is done outside the country by South Africa. This slide just talks about the kind of mandate that we've got. We fully align ourselves with the National Development Plan, and we do have a 2011 National Tourism Sector Strategy, which is what we are currently implementing. This has been a very successful strategy, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. We have seen over the past 6 years or so, continuously and consecutively, growth in this sector, and that growth realizing very good results as well, as you may be aware, in terms of both issues pertaining to employment, both issues pertaining to the GDP growth, but also in terms of bringing the much-needed foreign earnings into the country in terms of foreign currency. And of course, the departmental strategy then goes into the levels of details in that regard. So when you look at broadly the contextualization of tourism within the foreign policy space, and you look at the diplomacy of Ubuntu document, then you would be able to see that the promotion and development of tourism is also within that context. Need I add, though, that tourism is not purely a diplomatic function in terms of the Vienna Convention. And yes, it is an extended part of diplomacy from an economic diplomacy point of view, but as such, it would not necessarily squarely fit within what we would deem to be foreign service. And this is why it's actually not necessarily part of what is here. We do not necessarily send the attachés and specific representatives that are coming directly from government in the main, as we're talking about the Public Service Act. We do have primary legislation that actually governs what we do, and that really relates to, amongst other things, the promotion of both domestic as well as international tourism. And the marketing function is actually a larger part of that. We have given that specific mandate, or assigned that specific mandate in terms of that legislation, which is the Tourism Act of 2014, to South African tourism. And that entity also happens to be a scheduled a public entity, which is a Schedule 3. So it actually gets an appropriation from Parliament as well. And it does have a footprint. At one stage, we put together a framework to decide in terms of where are the areas that we should focus on with regards to our marketing efforts globally. To go through that particular process would require quite some considerable amount of time, probably a presentation of its own, but I can try and summarize what it actually comprises of. We look at the ease of access to all these particular markets from there to South Africa. That would include issues pertaining to elites, that would include issues pertaining to visa facilitation and so on, whether we've got waivers and so on and so forth. That would also include the state of the economy in those particular markets. It would also include the ease of doing business with people within that particular market. So this could be whether there is a sufficient number of tour operators that are likely to be able to accept some of the products that we sell and so on and so forth, the ease of reach in terms of media access and all those kinds of things. So we look at all these variables, and we are able then to rank some of these issues. And depending on how things come out, previously we used to have a cutoff point of, in terms of the outbound numbers of people coming from that particular market, not necessarily just coming to South Africa, how big is that and how much are they spending outside? But then you would have how much of that actually is coming to South Africa. If it would go past a threshold of 20,000, then we would take that as a market where we need to actually do a lot more, because there is a large group of people or a large volume of people that we are actually not converting yet. Yet other markets that are also of equal distance to where we are, or even more connecting points before you get to South Africa, to get to those markets are much more than if you are actually coming directly to South Africa from those markets. So on the basis of that, we've got offices in these countries that we've indicated here. But we have now realized that it is not feasible to actually have an office everywhere around the world. It's not practical. And we are looking at the approach that takes a hub-and-spoke approach. So for instance, when we close the Italian office, we would still be able to reach the Iberian Peninsula together with some of those countries in the Western Europe. That would be sufficient and adequate reach through an office that would then be operating from Paris. The West Africa through an office that operates from Nigeria, and then the list goes on. China, that office would then be able to service the Korean Peninsula. It would be able to service the Japanese
and the countries that are actually in and around that. So that's the kind of approach that we've taken. This is just a depiction of where the hubs are and what sort of extent of reach in terms of the other countries that are supposed to be serviced. Now, we work very closely with DERCO. But it's a very clear distinction between what we do and what DERCO does. So if you take, as an example, our presence in any of the offices that I've just shared, we work almost towards a transactional relationship. And this relationship is largely direct with the operators on the other side. So you would have to actually get into real negotiations to say, here, we are giving you targets, we would like you to bring us X amount of people from this place, from that place, from that place. And then you go into signing of joint marketing agreements with the various players that are in that particular market. So once you get into that kind of relationship, it's pseudo-commercial, if you could put it that way. It starts getting totally out of the realm of the diplomatic space. But then we know that we're not going to be able to reach the entire world as a goal. So we do put together very good collateral / marketing material that we are able then to put before DERCO and say, DERCO, this is how the profile of tourism looks like in terms of the targeted market where you happen to be present. And they're able to take that. Most of it is then translated so that it can speak to the specific market and so on. They're able to take that, and when there are shows and so on within those particular countries, they're able to then present that and be able to show what this is and so on and so forth. As the level of maturity within that market develops, we are then able to observe whether it is the right time then to actually be able to get into a level of activation that then relates to, yeah, our product specifically, and here is an agreement that we would like to get into with you to be able to bring these numbers into our country and so on. So that's where the relationship actually comes together. We participate in the annual Heads of Missions debrief sessions, and we update them with regards to what are the new developments and so on. just now in September, Minister Maitama Shabane was reaching out to the East Asian community, and we were part of that particular delegation, but the essence of it was that we were actually going to share the details about the markets within that particular space and how the hub is actually going to operate in that particular space and the kind of support that we require from the heads of missions from that particular environment. I think I've covered it adequately. So there was a request that we should also look at some clause by clause. And this really is just a reaffirmation that we are in support. So some could be taken as small enhancements here and there, but not necessarily a substantive shift in terms of what we have already supported. As we said, South African tourism is not necessarily covered by these bills in terms of foreign service specifically. And there is a suggestion that there should be a level of clarity that the foreign service needs to be served should really be trying to make an interest. But obviously that's we want to put it in a clearer way.
we are of the view that, you know, that would evolve. That would evolve. So it's not something that would necessarily be put into a piece of legislation per se. But the guiding framework in terms of what that would be and how it so should probably be something that is considered. The role of the national departments that would be sending should be clarified. That might be something that you, from the department side, may consider to do it in the regulation. But our view then would be the regulations should be so clear that the legislation should be so clear that it doesn't then leave the ambiguity in the nature of regulations that then follow. We experienced this when we were putting together certain regulations and we realized that we needed to come back in terms of our own act. We needed to come back to Parliament so that we could actually be a lot more specific about the kind of powers that we are asking for. So ordinarily reading it, it may sound that it's clearer, but it works well when everybody knows precisely this is what it is and this is what the powers that have actually been given. Also in terms of the operational issues and so on, I think that is the function of regulations, but again what I've just said would apply. The levels of security clearance and so on, again that would be a question of being able to say that would be determined and will be determined with the security agencies and so on. The actual levels as well, that sounds to me like something that would be a function of regulations. But the framework within which that is decided and the risk profiling and so on, the processes that will follow, the guiding broader principles should probably be contained within this framework. Now, the responsibilities of the heads of missions, around issues of the locally recruited officials and so on. We agree fully that the ultimate authority is the head of mission. That's the representative of the head of state in that country. So we agree with that. We say we uphold that. But there should not be ambiguities about the reporting lines of people that are actually posted. So when something has gone very well and the head of mission has reported it, it normally would be departments that are not necessarily DERCO that would take that. But when things have not necessarily gone well, the head of mission takes the ultimate responsibility to say, something happened and it happened under your watch. So that is something that there should be some level of clarity with regards to those lines and so on. Of course, it's not necessarily a function of legislation as well. I would still think it is a function of regulation. There is a question about the responsibilities with regards to the recalling when it comes to other sending departments. And that should also be a bit clearer. So it is clear when it comes to somebody who is within their core and so on. So what becomes the role of a department that believes it's time for somebody who they had actually sent to come back. So some of those dynamics might arise. So it's something perhaps to give some bit of attention to. And we are saying there should be a code of conduct for foreign service. We which would assist in terms of having common rules applied across the board. I want to just add here that it doesn't directly relate to the bill, but it's similar to South African corporates. We have been asking this question for a while to say, what kind of code of conduct would we want them to actually adhere to? Often they say King 4 will be the best way to do that. But the question is whether they apply King 4 when they are outside the borders of the country, or they apply King 4 because they are in within the borders of the country. And it's something that we've been saying, what kind of identity would we be proud of when we actually, but what do we do, what sort of instrument can actually assist us with that? But we are saying for foreign service, we would really say that code of conduct should be something that out there should be able to apply as a good practice that can also be taken by others that have got the presence globally that do not necessarily fall within the specific ambit of what the bill seeks to control. We are also saying that perhaps there should be it should be mandatory for national departments in the economic sectors to present to heads of nations in this induction the same thing that we're saying we do. That's of course I'm saying economic sectors because we are coming from the economic sector, from the economic classes. But this could also be taken a bit further to say, when you're sending somebody, and that's why there was specific emphasis to the heads of nation, when you're sending somebody, we understand the diplomatic training, that's okay. But the person is representing the country in totality. And there's a need that depth of understanding of everything that is really the country is pursuing is understood. So the national interests, broader paper can be presented within that training, that's okay, but there are certain nuances within that would allow for better ownership of the message and carrying that message across and say, what is the country faced with? The country is faced with water shortage, and what do we do? And I'm actually going to this particular nation. And when I spot that opportunity, will it relate to what I actually received as I was being trained? So there is diplomatic training, which is the core of being able to practice the trade itself. But the other aspects of being able to own and champion South African national interests when you get to the other side is something that we are actually supposed to flag. The issues around the coordination mechanisms. We are saying that they should not be optionality. If we agree on what the particular modus is for coordination, that should be the modus of coordination. But we are also mindful previously when dealing with issues of whether it is a may or a shall, we are in section 7. We were told at some point that if it's put in legislation, whether it's a may or it's a shall or must, it's immaterial because the mere fact that it was actually put in a piece of legislation, there's an intent behind it, and that intent must be upheld. So that's something that really we're just saying that the language used should not leave so much room for optionalities and so on and so forth. In terms of assets and so on,
we don't necessarily have assets in the missions. And of course, PFMA does make adequate provision with regards to asset disposal processes and so on, whether they are in the country or whether they are outside the country, but we don't necessarily have assets in the missions as such, so that we did not necessarily spend too much on time. We are of the view that the provision with regards to the powers of the minister to issue policies, codes, directives, and so on, where such would have a direct implication for other departments' operations that are that have a footprint in the missions or in that particular space where we are practicing diplomacy, it should be done in consultation with. And this is a very critical one because it's a it would define how things will be done. So upfrontly, there is this clarity, all of us know precisely that should there be direct implications, there will be a certain level of consultation that would actually then take place. Of course, this goes without saying, the issues about delegation and accountability. I don't think I need to say much about this, but it goes together. But ultimately, obviously, what I'm reading from this is that the suggestion is that there's going to be a very close collaborative relationship in terms of the rollout, so that you do not actually find yourselves in a space where you had the delegation, but so you exercise it. You've got to make sure that those that have given the delegation are aware of it, or that which we are actually doing in that particular process. The regulations, we are also requesting Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members that they be in a mandatory sort of fashion, done in a manner that is consultative, given the nature of the bill, that it is a consolidating bill, which rationalizes, harmonizes, but there are functions that are in different areas, and those functions would still be executed. The modalities may be different in terms of coordination, but they would still be executed. And we are saying that perhaps in this particular area we should go for regulations that allow for a very consultative approach in the manner of development, and not only just the normal gazetting process and such. This might have been informed, the issue around SADC might have been informed by our intention to revive what was called the SADC Tourism Policy Unit from our side. And what we're looking at is just whether we need to look into these bigger bodies that would be sending people to and so on. And some clarity or guidance with regards to that would assist. It does affect us, but not just us. I'm sure it does affect others as well, who can also be able to benefit from such process clarity, if I could put it like that. We are reaffirming that there are no legal implications at this stage for the Department of Tourism. There are no contradictions with the objectives as well as the spirit of the Tourism Act of 2014. And we do believe that there's value in having this level of rationalization. And it will go a long way in terms of making sure that, if I could use the word, the center is holding in terms of our foreign service activities. So it will allow us to be able to understand the totality of what is actually happening within our missions and the extent to which that is assisting us in terms of meeting our obligations with regards to the persuasion of our national interests as a country. So we therefore would support this bill and would be happy to see it coming into law and being applied across all our missions and the Malay missions and the foreign service agents. I thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
DG Tarage. Tarage. They will last be the order.
The Amish Venda.
Oh, cross great. Dolivu. What do they? Let's welcome Honorable Sterkman. I saw that on your arrival you wanted to sit here and then you decided to move away. It's not a bad idea to sit next to the ANC.
She was prettier
than I was. I can assure you, flirting with the ANC is not a bad idea. Honorable Steenkamp, most welcome. Honorable Kenya wants to have the first bite of the input or presentation by the DG. Honorable Kenya.
Thank you, DG, for this presentation. Short and precise. I only have two questions. You want to take them? One is because I don't want to miss. I'm concerned about page 4.
Yeah.
That talks to the operating a network of international offices for marketing and promoting South African market. And I said you are talking about some that are going to be closed, which have got that aesthetic. Now on that list of those countries, I just want to check what is happening in Brazil, because to my understanding, if we say Brazil, also falls under the BRICS countries, which are part of. Therefore, is it not, what impact will it give to BRICS if you close that Brazil? I understand there is China in India, though I don't see Russia, but also I have a concern that Brazil now is going to be closed. So that's why I said, what is going to be the impact there? Secondly, on page 6, coupled with page 13 and with page 13, you are talking about the attache on page 6. About the attache, sorry. You are saying, on bullet, I think this is the second bullet, that, however, NDG doesn't have tourism attaches in missions and does not plan to deploy officials in the near future. Coupled to that is page 13. Page 13, when you say that on your conclusion, those two bullets that talks to the posting of officials and attaches to service, members of foreign service. You say that when there's a need arise in future, therefore you can consider consultation with the on posting. Also, on the first one, you are talking about that the bill does not have any legal implications on the mandate, because entity does not post officials to the mission at this point. The reason why I'm clapping this screen, because it talks about the national interest. If we say national interest at heart, now we say that we don't post its officials to the missions abroad in this point. Now also, do you think that it also can strengthen the national interest in tourism if you say that you are talking about that you see that in future and you don't see it now that it is needed to post in these attaches? If we are talking about national interest, do you think that will serve the national interest? Thank you very much, Chairperson. Those are my two questions.
Thank you very much, Honorable Kenya. Honorable Khatebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also concur with Honorable Kenya that we appreciate the presentation which is in front of us now, and also appreciate the fact that the department has gone to town in looking at the implication of this bill in their operations. So the first question which I'd like to ask here is the issue of the footprint they have internationally. As they have so many offices, although they are going to be reduced to 10 or 9, they are going to be reduced to 9, these offices, how many warm bodies are in those offices? How many people are in those offices? When those people are posted in those offices, do they go through the diplomatic academy first so that they can understand the issue of Grand South Africa? Because we believe that whoever is going to represent South Africa anywhere must be able to tell the entire story of South Africa, not only the section of South Africa. If it's in tourism, we cannot only speak about tourism, because there are certain issues which can go beyond that. How many people are there? What training do they get before they go outside? And number two, Chair, I think the DG raised the issue of South African tourism as an entity. And then, therefore, it cannot be affected by this bill. But I think he was correct when he said that the head of mission in any country is the representative of the president of the country. Will it not be contentious for that person who's there representing an entity which is financed by the South African government to have a close relationship with the head of mission? Because that head of mission represents the president of the country. We just went to Canada, Jack. You know, the model of Canada which they are using, I like. They say whoever is in the country, there is only one pen which they use. It means that in whatever capacity you come, as long as you represent Canada in that country, before anything goes back home or goes out, it must come to the head of mission first. That's why they call it the principle of one pen. So that their president, it means that if... I'll make an example. If Utak Masang in America, if Utak Masang is in America as our ambassador, there's a tourism office there. Before the report comes in, before the issues arise, or even if the problems are encountered by the South African tourism, he must know first, because he's the one who accounts to the president. Is it a problem for whoever is in those offices that whatever report, before it goes out, it must be penned, use the pen of Bob Matang in Washington, so that Bob Matang is going to be able to account what is happening in North America, in USA, I think, why do they have a problem with that, Chair? And then on the issue, on the other issue, Chair, the issue of, is South African tourism not belong to any multinational institution? You speak about health, and health belongs to World Health Organization. Agriculture, Department of Agriculture, belongs to FAO, Food and Agricultural Organization, whatever. Department of Trade and Industry is affiliated to World Trade Organization. So, but those people who are serving those multilateral organizations, they are taken as diplomats. That's why Comrade Zaidia in the WTO is regarded as an ambassador, is elevated to the level of an ambassador. So does South African tourism not belong to any such international organization? What protocol are they using if they're such an organization? I'll come back later, Chair. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Honorable Khatebe. Honorable Raputi, you want to come in?
Yeah.
Now, okay.
Yeah,
thank you very much for the presentation. I really wanted to check on page 8. Page 8, first comments on section 3, requirements for members for foreign service, on the implication. I really don't understand if the level of security clearance is not stipulated, it may lead to inconsistency.
That is the one that I really need. Why? Because I think security clearance is needed to all people who are going, some of the people have been posted. And why should be, or there is a different way of getting some security clearance from the rest. So I really don't know. This one, okay? The ambiguity, and then on page, I think it's slide 9. Yes. The implication on section 4, head of mission. Clarity in terms of reporting lines need to be clear to avoid any ambiguity. And I'm of the view that I think the ambassador, he is the, I think the alpha and the omega when he is being posted. So I really don't know. Probably we'll get it from the DG. You want that they must still report to you or whatever. But we are of the view that really, when we are talking about this foreign service bill, we really want to ensure that there should not be that kind of role ambiguity. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Bachmann, for now, you'll come back later.
Yeah.
Oh, no problem. Honorable Tarake, or Mr. Tarake.
We hope to say that we are not.
Mr. Tarake, I have one or two comments to make in the members are going to come back. What you are saying is very much on a light note.
Yeah.
Except that some light notes are very heavy. My notes are everywhere. thank you very much for the presentation. Please forgive me if you find that either the comments that I make are not very much related to the bill, but they're related to the work of the department, and it may sound the other way around. What do we want there? Because you actually have a committee that holds you accountable and that oversights you. For instance, you were talking about the diplomacy of Ubuntu, and you have officials that you deploy abroad to promote tourism, either from the department or from the South African tourism. Are they, in addition to obtaining security clearance, trained on trade and economic diplomacy, and they have a fair understanding of what constitutes South Africa's national interest? My sense is that, as you correctly indicated, that they represent the totality of South Africa. Are they trained on this? And who then checks that in one of these issues they may or have misrepresented the country? For instance, on their security issues, if there's a breach, what happens in terms of recall? Then you are saying that the work that they are doing is not a diplomatic function in the lexical sense of the word, which is correct. But people who are promoting or must promote their country, such as tourism, which will have impact on the economy of the country, you know, the hospitality industry, the employment, and all of those things, where do they get their training? And how do they link up with the mission abroad? Where are these officials located? Well, you see, if you don't have trade attachés, and your officials are also not in the mission, in terms of which the head of the mission would then be the head, overall head of that mission, where are they? Are they in a separate office somewhere? The Department of International Relations every year hold tourism pavilions. It promotes the country under the auspices of the head of mission. How are you working with them? And because if you look at what is on page 6, bullet number 3, just go to page 6, bullet number 3 then. You are saying that the Department of Tourism and South African Tourism are leveraging on DESCO's international footprint in terms of these 124 missions in 107 countries. But earlier on, you have said that you are not everywhere. So this formulation, whilst it is correct that you would follow the countries where we have a diplomatic presence, but we are not everywhere, the department is not everywhere, the department does not have trade attachés. Now, it is also closing offices somewhere. I wonder if you can tie this, all of this together. Those that you have got asterisks on page 4. Angola, Angiti, those with asterisks are to be closed. Did you? It says Angola, it's Italy, it's Brazil. In Japan. In fact, I saw something about Nigeria as a hub. We have a very lean presence, if at all, in the African continent. I would have thought that this department would want to promote tourism in all the continents of the world. And I have no quarrel with the countries that you've mentioned there, your France, your Germany, your USA, your UK, for historical reasons, as well as for economic stroke trade reasons. I think they traveling quite a lot. But with the limited experience that I have of traveling what God did, or Allah, or whoever did, was to endow each of the countries with a particular geographical feature or something that you may not find anywhere. Now, if you don't go to China or you don't go to Russia and sell that feature that we are the only ones who have got the Table Mountain, or the Chinese going somewhere and say, we are the only ones who have got the Chinese Wall. Everywhere else, there's always Mpumalanga has got God's window. No, I don't want to get into that. The issue is, when you promote tourism, you say that here are the things that you other people don't have, or are part of the wonders of the world. So this absence in certain regions, for instance, we are not at all there in Australia. And in my view, we could have posted an official in the offices of our missions there, which would make, what would be expensive would be the house, but the offices would be the same as those. So I'm just saying it plows into the functions of the department, but it's just that I'm asking this in the interest of South Africa. You don't have assets. Now, you don't have assets. If you have separate offices, your own offices, and there are assets there, your own offices would fall under public works. I don't know what comment I can make on this. But you see that bill, the quarrel that public works has with the bill is that it encroaches or wants to wholly annex that mandate, their mandate of assets, particularly physical assets like buildings, into DERCO. Now, if that were to happen, what would happen to your own offices, or to the extent that they are owned by government? On page 12, I see that this in consultation shall act in consultation or after consultation, and you say here shall should be firm, while the consultation process might state after. Oh, I don't think I understand this. As I know, the Department of Finance and this department have issues sometimes about consultation after or in consultation. They always trample on each other's toes on this regarding some finances. Oh, by the way, also with Home Affairs. Now, I couldn't firmly understand you, whether you are saying that the department must be firm in, must ensure that it does this. Is it a record, or is it on the making the regulations? You say it must do this and then consult after, or it must do this thing in consultation with that particular affected department, but nonetheless do it anyway, whether they concur or not. Clarity like that is sought. Yeah, I think those are our comments. DG, let's hand over to you and your team.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman, thank you, Honorable Members, for those questions. I'm going to take all the questions. Largely because most of the questions that were asked do have some sort of policy implication. But the colleagues can add if there's not implication. Honorable Chairperson, let me perhaps start from the end with some of the questions that the Chairperson raised and some of the observations made. The first question, which probably would be an easier one to start with, is that we indeed do not have assets. We rent places where we operate in. So unlike in cases where South Africa owns properties in places like London and so on, so we don't have that. At one point, we did have a property that was in Netherlands, which even before this process commenced, was already disposed of through the normal DPW processes and the public the finance processes and so on. So at this point in time, we do not have physical infrastructure that belongs to the government of the Republic of South Africa. So that's why we're saying we were comfortable that. But I would not necessarily, without the privilege of having seen the actual submission made by the Department of Public Works, I would not necessarily be able to provide any further input in that regard. Operating model. And I agree, Honorable Chairperson, that for us we were more of the view that it is important to share. We do have a tourism committee here in Parliament, but of course we see honorable members as Parliament. So we are accountable to Parliament, but it is important that we share fully and openly what is it that we do, because it does affect you to an extent. Whatever it is that we do, it does affect you to an extent. We have people that we send to the missions. We only send the head of the mission from the country, not mission, rather, the head of the office. So we have marketing offices. These hubs that I'm talking about, the head of that hub is the person we send from South Africa. The rest are locally recruited people, and these are people that are purely in the space of tourism, sales, marketing, former tour operators. So it's really, there isn't, we are in the business of selling South Africa's products abroad. We're in the business of making sure that we are able to get the various operators that are in that particular space to get as many of our products into their brochures as possible, to make sure that those brochures are sold and the people that are supposed to come here end up actually coming here. The policy related aspects are dealt with by the department, not by SA Tourism.
I'm sorry, we don't normally interject people like that I'm doing, that's why I must apologize. You are saying that you get locally recruited people, say for instance a Chinese who must write in the Chinese language and obviously the person understands China better, to promote South Africa. Who monitors this person that he or she does does the work properly, or who checks that before this thing goes out, it says the right thing about Brand SA. Now that this person reports to you, who is hired by NDT and is not subjected to the mission of South Africa in China.
I'll get to those.
Good Chairperson. So there's a lot of questions, but I needed to clear that first part.
Okay.
There's a very specific question that says, how many people do you have in these offices?
Mm.
And the question was also basically saying, how many people are you sending from South Africa to these places?
Mm.
And that's the question I was answering. So the answer to that question is that we send one person to each of these hubs who's going to head that particular hub.
Mm.
So all these other people, Honorable Chairperson, that you are referring to,
mm.
would then report to that particular person. That's a South African who would then take charge. Now, that person works with the mission. They're not doing their own thing on the side, and the mission does not know what is going on. They work with the missions. But why I emphasize that they are not diplomats in the strict sense is that the convention will never allow them to have extension of diplomatic immunity.
Oh, yeah.
They will never be bearers of a diplomatic passport. They are subjected to every other thing that every civilian in that particular country is subjected to. And by design, we find that it is quite a lot more useful because it then allows them to hang around in places where an ordinary diplomat would not. Ordinary diplomats would not hang around certain places, ideally. Ideally, they wouldn't. So. These people are able to actually go to such places. They are able to go and speak business at the comfort of any place they would want to go. They can visit people's houses. They can visit people's offices and so on without big question marks about what was that diplomat actually doing in that particular office. So this is why we're saying it works for us and it works well, and it is something that we discussed this at length. That's why I was saying when Derco tests the environment a bit through the 90 or so organized events. And so, ultimately, when we realize that now it's actually getting to that point where we need to start having a whole different discussion, that's when we also walk into that space and start providing that support. So that's what we do. They do go through diplomatic training so that they are not naive.
Yeah.
They are co-assists as well. They are not naive at all. They do go through protocol training. So in times, for instance, we would go to China in a state visit and so on. You would have our person there, but he would have come with the ambassador and the other attaches mm-hmm. that would be there. So there is very close, neat working relationship. I've worked with all the DIRCO DGs from DG Nsaluba to DG Machila to the current DG Muhai. But I also am coming from working with a diplomat who, as we're putting together some of these systems, was able to actually assist us a lot. Ambassador Makubela, who used to be my boss, is one of the former chief of state protocols and the former ambassador. So we have taken that system and really internalized it to be able to try and pursue these things. Then there's also core training, obviously, that then relates to you are ahead of this hub. So you become really the extension of the accounting officer, as we say, within that particular space. So that kind of training also takes place. There's also training that takes place in terms of the core of the substance. What we have now brought in is a framework that allows us to actually pull them from within so they get opportunities to then go to those places and so on and so forth. But we don't have the same kind of pegs and then so that would come with the posting of people abroad. And do the South African tourism, do they have a presence in international bodies? We deal with that aspect at the National Department in terms of the aspects that relate to international bodies. In the main, we've got the United Nations World Tourism Organization, that is our UN arm, if one could, the UN organ to which we are actually a member. But it doesn't have a similar arrangement where you've got representation like FAO and so on. It has a permanent secretariat, and it elects every 5 years, 4 or 5 years, it elects a general secretary who then runs with the program and so on. Then we go there for general assembly and the executive council. So actually, we as South Africa are the current deputy president for the African chapter of the UNWTO. So those are the elements. And then obviously we've got responsibilities towards SADC. There is a body within SADC which has been reorganized. We call it RITOSA, which is the Regional Tourism Marketing Organization for Tourism. And it has these bodies like South African Tourism as well as pure industry representation. As government, we have moved out of that particular space so that it could then go into the business of marketing pure. This is why we have emphasized the point that we do need to have within SADC the we must bring back the policy unit that was dealing with tourism, so that policy unit then gives direction to that particular body, which is really partially independent. It raises some resources of its own as well. It comes in to the government, but also raises some of those resources. The CEO of SAT sits in that body of RITOSA. Currently, South Africa, obviously, as the chair of SADC, would also then take responsibility for tourism at Tinka level, that we should be able to deal with those things as well. Then, I've already indicated the immunities don't apply. So if a hub head does something that we deem to be inappropriate, the South African legislation would, in terms of labor legislation, would kick in, would discipline the person. But if it is a criminal conduct, the person will be arrested. So that's how it is working. So cases where you would find that this really works excellently. In China, now I'm coming to the issue about the BRICS and where do we keep offices, where do we not keep offices. In China, you would have, we made a request that we would like to open an office. And we did this through the diplomatic process. The Chinese came back to us and they said, we don't have a problem with this, but when we send people to any country, we need to accord you accreditation as an accredited destination. Now, their accreditation works such that on this side, whomsoever is receiving must actually have adequate insurances and so on, that these people are going to come here, but the insurance issues and so on, all of that has actually been taken care of. And it's not cheap. It's not cheap. An operator at any given point in time must demonstrate that they do have at least $1 million that is safeguarding all this, it's just somewhere. That's a significant amount of money. So industry, they organize themselves, they then do the insurance schemes and work with the insurance companies, and they actually then get into that particular space. It does have implications when it comes to issues of transformation. It's a lot of money we're talking about. So the clubbing of these monies together and be able to say, we'll then come in that particular. But China, their industry is regulated, highly regulated. They, on their side, must have, if they are sending people abroad, they must have an equivalence of about 5 million rand or so, in their bank account to say, yes, this is operating as a going concern, there are no issues and so on. So the Chinese would do that for their industry, and they would then indicate to us, these are people you can work with. So there is much closer working relationship. So since the times of Ambassador Nchinga, all the way until the current ambassador, we've been working with the Chinese through sort of like a hybrid approach, where the ambassador deals with the political issues, access and so on. And once that has been opened, we are able to walk into that space with ease. We've got one of the most prime spaces in terms of being able to access office facilities that are accessible and so on. And that was the work of the embassy, to be able to actually get that. But once we are there, it is very clear, they were very, very clear to say, Geneva Convention, the Vienna Convention, does not give you a right to be diplomats here. This is how you're going to operate, this is how you're going to conduct yourself, and so on. So we operate in that kind of space all the time. Then we look at, and it is a question, a genuine question that we have also been asking ourselves, our footprint in the continent. We see ourselves as within the continent. So an office that is in Johannesburg servicing Zimbabwe, an office that is in Johannesburg servicing Luanda, servicing Maputo, we see that as much more effective in terms of the financial model. Because what is required, Angola is an example, there will be a certain number of people that will be required to be appointed if we are actually to open a full office. There are certain rules, regulations, processes that we have got to go through. It becomes, and there are certain restrictions in terms of the extent of what we can or cannot do. But servicing that market from Pretoria and making sure that all that they need is actually adequately provided for, and you are able to sign those marketing agreements with the industry on the other side so that they can be able to bring people to this side, we are able to actually save a lot of money through that. So a bulk of the continent is actually centrally supported from our offices in Sandton, the South African Tourism offices in Sandton. In Brazil, we don't call it an office, because if we call it an office, there will be a lot to pay for that. There's some sort of a working arrangement where we've got an operator within Brazil who serves almost like a hub that is operating within South America. But that particular person gets to work directly with industry. It's an industry person. It's not representing South Africa, it's selling South Africa, let me put it that way. So it's very different from China, where that representation is very real, because if I could give an example, we were in China, Sango, when was this, in September? And at that time, they were...
Just be careful that this person must sell brand South Africa, not South Africa.
Tourism products from South Africa. So they... I just need to go back to my train.
Sorry.
The person
is selling
South African products,
yeah.
South African tourism products,
yeah,
in that market. We give them very specific targets. This is what we would like to see. We do performance assessments and so on and so forth. So that is the way that we've been operating in that particular market. The scale is a little bit lower. We need to actually then get it to grow. What we do some analysis before. South American market is very sensitive. They want somebody whom they understand. So
it's not an easy place to do business. You probably would have heard this from other departments that have got, it's not a very easy place to do business. If you take an example of China, China, if there's good political relations, they will open the doors for you. They will open all the doors for you. So they asked us questions, the September issue I was talking about. We were at the UNWTO General Assembly, they were the hosts. And they asked us the question, a straightforward question, at a bilateral, to say, why are we having more and more Chinese falling victims of crime? Are they targeted? But when we gave them assurances that it is not the case, they are not targeted, and that there is a strategy in place and the country is implementing it, immediately after that, we then started seeing the following, was the following day or the same evening? Same evening, we started seeing articles coming from the Chinese media. This matter is on TV, and they are actually stating what we were saying at that time. The minister was clear about these issues, and they were stating them as she was stating. Following day, then, our hub manager comes back with an indication to say, it's like something has just been opened. All those forward bookings that were cancelled have just now started coming through. So we are mindful of this. Delco plays a central role, very central role. So discussions between the minister, the ambassador, those things take place. So we work together well, but within that space, obviously understanding that they are on the, these people cannot work, cannot be construed to be in that pure diplomatic space. The issues relating to and again, let me just go back to the BRICS issue. We are making use of that relationship effectively. When there were questions about the unintended consequences of the immigration regulations, one of the aspects that was approved by the IMC that was dealing with this matter, by cabinet after the recommendations of the IMC that was dealing with this matter, was that let us explore a possibility of trusted or accredited agents, travel agents that could actually make applications on behalf of their clients. Before we knew it, we were able to actually get a full waiver on Russia, and we're actually seeing now the numbers on Russia are starting to rise. We were able to go to the Chinese, and we said to the Chinese, this is what we would like to do, and they said, that's fine, here is the database of all the people that we've accredited. And then we're able to take that database and say, this is it. And on an annual basis, we actually renew that. And we were then allowed, which is not something that happens ordinarily in China, to expand our networks of the visa facilitation facilities to other cities that were not necessarily, because Chinese, from the beginning, they were saying, if you want an extension of such, we will grant it to you on condition that you've got a presence, your mission has got a presence in that particular locality. But they then changed that and said, it's fine, so that okay, you can actually expand to these other cities. And that is not happening with everybody else. We are using a similar model in India and so on. So these relationships, we're making use effectively of them, and we are actually getting good results out of them. And we do see that there's going to be a lot more growth in those markets in the future as well.
It's called Katam Kutam Yasela.
The clarity as to what did we mean by Honorable Chaperson, what did we mean by possibility of inconsistency with regards to security clearance? All we're saying is, If Victor is going to be sent as a head of a mission to country X, and Sango is going to be sent to country Y, if we all require top secret security clearance as
heads of missions require that. That's a category. Deputy heads of mission require this. The counselors, they require this. Then we know it up front that this is what we should be. This is mainly also for people that are coming from other departments. Because by then you will be sending a person that already has the necessary, all these things are already sorted by the time the person gets it. So it just gives that level of clarity in terms of the people that must then do the actual implementation. The reporting lines, the ambassador is definitely the person that must take absolutely all responsibility for what takes place and accountability for what takes place in the mission.
Mm-hmm.
But current practice is something to be looked into, and I'm sure DERCO and those departments that have got people in the missions would be in a better position than we are to be able to give more details with regards to that. But what we are saying is, if we send an attaché, what is the reporting line between the sending department and the person who's been sent? Because in terms of the execution of the real day-to-day things with regards to that function, there is a policy aspect that this legislation is not necessarily delegating to the head of mission. So that person still remains the person who's carrying them. They will, of course, brief the ambassador and say, by the way, these are things that head office wants us to look into, and this is what needs to happen, and so on and so forth. That is construed automatically to be directives, policy directives that are coming from the respective executive authorities of that particular policy mandate already given by their respective acts. So we are saying the clarity in terms of how something like that works would go a long way in making this much more smooth process to transcend to the next foreseeable system. Are we sending? Are we not sending? For now, we are not sending. And when we said for now, we're talking about the current term of office. We don't have a policy to send people as attaches. Of course, I can't talk about policy matters and what the future policy direction is going to be. That's a political prerogative. But at this point in time, the mechanism that we are using has been very effective, and we are happy with it. The only area that we do foresee that there may be a need for such secondments or so is this issue we raised about when it comes to issues of SADC and so on and so forth. That, yes, it says this, but the processes that we should all follow to be able then to say we are confirming those attaches and so on, this should be the way. There may be a need in future if there is such a need based on assessments and so on, then we'll look at it. But the likelihood of, and we do see it with, there are some people that send attaches here to serve on tourism missions. They are very hamstrung. They are very, very hamstrung. They are not able to do what we are able to do. So it's, and it also shows in the numbers. So South Africa, the tourism numbers are 10 million plus. The next country would be about 2 million or so within the region. So those are factors that we do look at, and we realize that it's working, if it's not broken, maybe we no need to fix it as such. Robert Chairperson, I think for now I have attempted to... Oh, the consolidated... What we are saying, thank you, Sanko. What we are saying, Robert Chairperson, is... It's pretty much related to what I've just alluded to now. Where there may be implications for mandates outside just pure coordination, or the manner of coordination that the regulation proposes may have direct implications, in terms of the execution thereof, of that particular mandate. It works best when there has been a consultation before the public gazetting of this. So it's almost like a joint ownership. Of course, what the legislation would have provided for, because I hear what Jefferson, what the issue about, whether do you consult, and if there's no agreement, then what? That I hear that question.
Mm.
But government, through cooperative governance mechanisms, has got ways of resolving those kinds of issues. So that would then be, but the issue is, if it's been consulted, and the legislation provided, because whatever is coming into the regulation, Jefferson, whatever is coming into the regulation, is purely solely on the basis of what was provided by the legislation. So it won't be something else that is coming from somewhere else. So if I disagree with what has already been provided for by the law, I have no grounds to do so, because that is what all of us must abide by. So that should still be able to work. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, DG, and welcome, Honorable Dudley. Honorable members, are there any further comments and questions before we draw to a close? Honorable Khatebe, you did threaten to come back.
I'm keeping my promise here, but the promise I'm keeping here is to appreciate the department in particular for the job well done. I think that South Africa as a country is reaping a lot of good benefits out of the operations of that department, so it is highly appreciated. But the question which I still want to get follow up on is the issue, the person who seconded to an office there, let's say I decide to go to Paris, we as a portfolio committee go to Paris next week, né? We go to the head of mission there, né? Will we get the report? If you ask about the issue of tourism, will we get a report from the side of the head of mission there? Will we get it up to date? What happens? What are the activities? Yeah. So that you can prove that there's this synergy between the two departments. Thank you.
Yes, DG, I did ask you about the tourism promotion events where each of our missions would have these tourism pavilions, etc. I didn't quite hear your family saying to send people there, or at least your LRPs who are in that country to send brochures, visit South Africa, Robben Island, all of our features. Now, besides, let me just speak generalities. As a committee, we have noted a weakness in the way we, as South Africa, we carry out our work through departments, DERCO, Economic Development, and DTI. I have spoken to the chairs, the chair of the Committee on Economic Development and the chair of the Committee on Trade and Industry. We are constrained by time. We want to invite, as this committee, want to invite all these ministers. For instance, a ministry like DTI would be why we don't have trade attachés in very strategic markets. Canada, sometimes it's France, sometimes it's or Shanghai, you know, an area where the total economic community is actually very lucrative, and we don't find people there, and the department says we don't have money. We want to know how the three departments also work together in ensuring that we change our trade and economic fortunes in our favor, or at least to a level where we have a fair advantage, whatever I mean by that. Because when it comes to our trade with China, our trade with India, our trade with Russia, our trade with Europe and the USA and UK, the trade deficit is against us. We are their market virtually. And to the extent possible, they would want to keep us that way. And they are very protectionist in their area, particularly regarding products that come from us in agriculture, which is our strength as a continent. So they are strong on technology. Now, whether we South Africans in these different departments, we confer among ourselves and say, this is what can be done this way, that in the interest of South Africa, outside looking at ourselves as departments. Cultural tourism put together with economic tourism. We must target countries that have developed millionaires or middle class. Nigeria, with a massive market like that in terms of the number of people and perhaps the number of rich people, the number of rich people in India, China. The population in that country may tell us that, and of course their income, may tell us that there's a lot of effort that must go into an area like that, recruit them to visit South Africa. And I know Air Africa were very thin because people actually come here as economic refugees, and of course we then have all the troubles that we have. But they're still important that we travel among ourselves in the continent. So we think we must find time and space, all of these three committees with the three ministers to have a discussion around all of these things. And the department is in full support of the bill. Just answer that one on trade pavilions or tourism pavilion. What do you do in that space every year, everywhere, wherever these are held? Did you?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members again. Let me start with Honorable Hatebe's question. We are work in progress, all of us. We are organized, we work with the missions, but what would also help is where we know, because if you want a detailed briefing, the mission will not be able to provide that. But if you want the hub head to join in when you are there, and you extend that invitation through the mission or through DERCO, then we'll be able to do that. This is why, in some instances, where we don't have hubs, which comes back to the chairperson's question, where we don't necessarily have a hub head, or we will have people coming from head office going to those particular places. This is why we with the recent visit that Minister did, we had a few people that were coming from head office that had to go there. So at head office, we do have people that have got a total broader. They understand what's going on literally everywhere. We've got analytics teams that look at these issues, Honorable Chairperson. So they will tell you the middle class in China, which is about 600 million and so on, what are they consuming? So even when it comes to the use of data and so on, you would know China is not on the same things as we are on. It doesn't have all these Facebooks and what. They've got their own. But the people that are actually in there are much more than the general ones globally combined. So we are able to actually reach to those consumption patterns, their manner of booking. What do they use? Are they using booking engines like the online channels and so on? So we see from the Chinese, they trust the traditional way. They want to know who is that particular operator that is sending them. And that person will then facilitate and give them the levels of assurance and so on. We do run something called South African Fundi. This is a training that we train the trade on the other side, tourism trade on the other side, so that they can speak about South Africa with a degree of authority and passion. So we do all those things to make sure that there's really a level of good representation and people are able to, and this then translates into the numbers that we actually see in the country, and also the money that people spend. We consistently have been having a net positive income in the billions, above 30, 40, these in terms of the trade balance. We've been putting that on an annual basis into this. So that's the kind of space. Now, coming back to what support do we give? We've got information about the whole of this country. We've got information about the perceptions of the market about the country from different perspectives. We package this fully and with a particular market in mind. This is the kind of material that we then give to Derco and say, add that particular platform, this is what you should do. But when we see that this thing is starting to get to a point where we now need to actually talk business, not just get people interested, that's when we step in and start actually taking that forward. But so far, all we want to say is that we do support. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You must promote Chipisani. Have you been to Chipisani?
Where is it?
In Venda.
Chipisa. I will not ask why or not, because just person was there. I know the place.
Yeah.
I know the place.
Yeah. It naturally oozes warm water, like butlers. Okay, thank you very much, DG. And thanks, you have a lot of patience about your work, it seems. Thank you very much. Let's now invite Mrs. Higgins to make a presentation on behalf of the Department of Science and Technology. You may leave, you may stay. It's always been working like that. Yeah. Mrs. Higgins.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Member.
On a presentation.
I apologize earlier that I don't have a presentation.
So ELAP.
No, I don't have a presentation. My apologies for
that. Okay. Sizobuza kanjani kodwa. Proceed, sizobona.
From the Department of Science and Technology, I think we have considered the bill, and we came to a conclusion that we don't have any objections on the bill. We were in a position also to make inputs to when the bill was being drafted by the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. Issues that are mentioned in the bill, in particular, how the bill will able to assist us as the department to make sure that we are able to coordinate activities that are being implemented at foreign offices in the continent and in the region. As the Department of Science and Technology, we're already having attachés and also representatives that are in certain offices. For instance, we have someone in Japan, we have someone in Brussels, we had someone in Russia, but currently the position is vacant. And we also have a secondment to the SADC Secretariat. The Department of International Relations has been very helpful to us in terms of coordination. diplomatic advice as well as training for people that goes to those missions. What we're doing as the Department of Science and Technology is to make sure that we promote science and technology in the region and in the continent and also internationally. We are driven by the foreign policy, which says to us how do we cooperate, especially making sure that we promote closer to home, for instance, SADC region, and also going to the continent and also internationally. We are driven by the foreign policy. Also, we have what we call the white paper on science and technology, which also tell us exactly what we're supposed to do in the region. We are also driven by some of the frameworks. For instance, in the SADC region, we implement the regional indicative strategic plan. We are a cross-cutter department, so we support departments like your water affairs, your environmental, and other areas as well. So we make sure that we advise in terms of science and technology, what technologies can be used or applied to make sure that they also be able to implement the activities. We also collaborate with a number of countries in Africa. As a department, we have got about 25 relations with African countries. Also internationally, we've got about 26 countries that we are collaborating with. And also we affiliate with a number of multilateral organizations, for instance, your UNESCO, your UNIDO, your World Bank, and other organizations, where we see how can we leverage support for our cooperation in Africa, and how can we make sure that we get help from those countries. The bills, I think it's clearly for us to engage the bills. We're able to see that even the areas that we're not too sure how to deal with them, especially the issue of people who are posted in, like, secondment in terms of the roles, who is responsible for what. So I think the bill was able to make sure that we are able to list out those things and understand them. And also, as science and technology, I can proudly say we've been able to engage in Africa and come up with some projects that are taken up very highly internationally. For instance, the Square Kilometer Array, which we're able to win in South Africa together with Australia. And we, as South Africa, we make sure that we have partners in Africa that are partnering in the issues of space and technology. We are also currently collaborating with the African Union on what is called Pan-African Universities, but South Africa will be operating in the area of space because we've got a lot of knowledge in that particular area. So I would say, in a nutshell, as the Department of Science and Technology, we support the business and we don't have any objection.
But I hope that you are direct.
Yes, Mr.
Yeah, you know that by law, by practice, that we do need a written submission to say what you are saying. To say we are in support, we have no objection, we will include the clauses, and that you can include some of the things that you have said here. Then there must be submission, because when we are done with our work, we will look at the departments that we would have consulted, would look at departments that have got objections and objections where and why. For instance, certain departments have got issues about employees, others have got issues about assets. Once we are going to look at that, and then of course we'll have a final engagement with the departments, and finally we'll then look at the clause-by-clause discussion. Honourable members, there you are. There you are, Honourable Kenya. Honourable Kenya, on the floor.
Thank you, Professor. I don't know what I would say in the presentation, because I don't think this presentation is a fair talk. As Shepherd has just said, we are concerned about that, because it's hard to get something very team that is very important, especially that I've come about the bill. But now I hear a verbatim as much as you say that you are supporting the bill, but at least there must be something that you will be, as Shepherd has just said, we need. Anyway, just a few questions. You are talking about the that you are collaborating with these countries. I understand you're talking about Japan, Brussels, SADC, Centenary, and also now you have included the Pan-African universities. And you talk about a lot of knowledge. But my two questions would be this first. If you say, yes, of course, I understand these are a few countries you are collaborating with. And now we always say that because we have got national interest at heart, we will always ask this question. If you say, how do you promote national interest? If now, to me, it seems that no, you are not so deeply involved in other countries. Secondly, I understand talking about 35 relations with countries in Africa, and 26 again. Mm-hmm. But in what manner? How do you in what manner you choose these countries? How do you choose them? In what manner? If you say I've got 25 here and then 26 here. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mrs. Kenya. Mr. Khadebe, Honorable Khadebe.
All right, Chairperson. I think that I appreciate the input which is coming from the director of DST. So what is important? She said that they belong to organization, multilateral organizations like UNESCO, UNIDO, World Bank. I don't know whether WIPO do belong to it. Well, international property organization. Mm-hmm. All right. So in these multilateral institutions, ne, do you have people you have seconded there as warm bodies who are permanently there to work upon? If they are there, how many of them are there? And then how do they report to their various missions? Because take for example, WIPO, its offices are there in Geneva. What is the relationship between your attachments there, let's say in WIPO, and our embassy in Geneva? How are the reporting mechanisms then facilitated? Will the issue of this bill, whereby it gives the overall control of the head of mission to a country where he or she is stationed, will it go, is it going to affect you positively or negatively around that? Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Khadebe, and our Khadebe. No, telukulum. All right. Then you think so? Any comments from? Okay. I was going to ask you more or less the same questions as Khadebe, and you would remember that the same questions were asked to a department about people that you have there and their relationship to. To our heads of missions, but this bill is not going to affect your employees who are trade attachés in these other countries, because that's where some departments pick up a quarrel. Home Affairs, for instance, would say, no, it's going to affect our employees, and they have got a separate accounting officer to account to in terms of matters of discipline, da 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 da. Now, you have a trade attachés. What's happening? That's why I was saying my question is close to the other one. Now, with regard to, well, this one is a question outside the bill. It's a question outside the bill. With regard to institutions you have affiliated to promote science and technology too, just to exchange notes. When it comes to the continent, is the department involved with other African states to turn into science what is known as the indigenous knowledge system in the continent. May not link up with you, but there are certain medicines that have been used to deal with certain diseases for many years in the continent or among the African people, which can be tested and things done, etc., etc., and you end up producing either pills or medicines or whatever. Now, you'll find different knowledge base in each of our countries. What is the strength of Nigeria in what? What is the strength of Sierra Leone in what? In South Africa, etc., etc. Now, in the affiliations that you have, are you looking at things like this? Taking, of course, into account that there is a discussion for the industrialization, but at the same time, you may not go that much far with other countries, even if they are your fellow African countries, because of industrial espionage. It's a difficult world.
Yeah.
Your technology can be stolen.
Yeah.
I wanna. But let me just say, let me go back to what I was saying. The claim is that there are certain medicines that that white people produced and now they are sold by pharmacists, whether South African or whatever, that originally, actually, the components were those of the African people. And that includes things like liquor. If you remember Mkombo tea and all those things, when I grew up, people were arrested for selling ukhulumani isiZulu nomisoti utshwala obuthile namarhewu as made by abogogo so marhewu in the industries that were around those areas. The next thing, you had many bars which were banned in the 80s that were selling the kind of beer or sorghum beer that actually had many properties of what was done by the indigenous people. And Amakheu included. And many others, yeah. Things that come from Insang, or things that come from Mhlonyana. Imithi nje ethile kumele siyimodernize, siyithengise as iphomise amaphilisi liquid or otherwise. Now, nina nikule area le efana nale. Ngoba ukucomplain that they came and then they did this, they did this, they modernized, they claim that it is their own, etc., etc. But there's still a lot that we actually must invent and innovate. Of course, ezinye, we can no longer come back because they've registered them now as a intellectual property of someone else. Well, it's outside the bill. It's just a general comment in the absence of issues in the bill. Members? Arnold Dudley? Take her on.
I went on a trip myself once to Washington and in New York when the committee was stopped from going, and I had an interesting time with the with our mission there. And I thought so much of what was being done was in the area of science and technology, was in terms of the inroads we were making there, and the kind of interactions we had. So I was, you know, so obviously having observed what a big impact our science and technology is making, even within countries like the United States, was very, very interesting. And I just wondered, so clearly, is our bill helping in any way in terms of the work that you do through the missions there? Is it really neither here nor there? Has it ever been discussed that anything in a bill would be more helpful? I'm just trying to think if maybe there's something, you may have no problem with this bill, but there might have been something we didn't look at that possibly could have been an aspect of the bill. Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, she's right, because in the submission, we want you to say you support that bill or you have no issues with that bill, which is not necessarily support, but you don't have issues because it doesn't affect you. And I think that's what the Public Service Commission has said in their letter, but I wonder if that letter is sufficient. It mustn't just be a letter. It must just check out the official. Are they not supposed to make it as a presentation following a request for this, that this is what we're saying? But, or is just a letter, the way I received it?
Yes, sir. They said they have no interest in that bill.
Yeah, they say they have no interest. They are not saying they are not affected by the bill. I saw that word, that is no interest. Yes.
People tell me, I feel that let us focus on this.
Okay.
That one will be dealt with
outside.
Okay. Mrs. Higgins?
Thank you, Chair. Maybe taking the first question, I think the question was about how do we choose this country that we cooperate with. I think we are driven, like I said initially, that the foreign policy is the first point of call in terms of how power is supposed to be doing. From the department, we have looked at a number of aspects. For instance, in Africa, we're looking at the big five. What are the big five countries that we can cooperate with? Looking at the economic aspects, for instance, what are the returns from cooperating with those countries? And also, in Africa as well, we also look at, sometimes not more than gaining something out of those countries, but how do we build capacity at that point, particular point in time? For instance, the issues of science policy, how do we assist those member states to have their policies in place? We are not looking at this as just using South African money to do that, but we're looking to say, in the long run, what is it that we can gain back from those countries once they're at a level where we are in South Africa as well? And also countries from international countries, also we mainly look at what are their strengths and what is it that we can gain from those countries. So mainly those are the aspects that we look at what level they are and what are the key issues in South Africa that we are struggling with that we can get information from. But also to say what are our strengths, how can we leverage from the strengths that we have as a country as well. On the second question about the international organizations that we, if I say cooperate with, I mean we are part of those committees, or else we are holding certain positions within those committees. And if we do, we are in a position to strategically influence the agenda of that particular organization. For instance, we in the UNESCO, we are chair of the UNESCO currently in that committee. So we are able to influence not only for South Africa, but we also look at how can we make sure that other African countries as well benefit from whatever is being dealt with in that particular area. I think we also mentioned about the issue of Geneva, for instance, how are we represented within the missions. We don't have an office in Geneva. However, we make sure that we use some of the representatives in the mission. For instance, someone in Brussels, we not only do Brussels, but we do other countries around there. So, and they are very close with the missions. We report to the missions and we make sure that the head of the missions know what is happening. So that one we are very active with it. I mean, for all our missions that we work in. In terms of the bill, like I said, to us, if anything, it strengthens what we've been doing within those countries. I think it clearly defines what our expectations, the reporting lines, the issues of finance, the issues of infrastructure, how we deal with them. I think exactly like the Department of Tourism said, we don't have infrastructure that we own in those countries, so we rent offices, but everything else is coordinated within those missions in terms of what is expected. And we also follow the process of the Department of Foreign Affairs and DPSA in terms of what is expected, what are the norms regarding to that. And I think the chair asked the question about the relationships with the head of the mission. I think I've touched on that a little bit. But everything that we do as South Africa, therefore, is our first point of call. Even when we want to communicate with the mission, we always make sure that as a Department of Foreign Affairs, we know all the focal points and we communicate with them, and then they communicate with our mission. Even if we've got delegations within those countries, we make sure that they know about it. And our strategy is that to make sure that when we visit the country, we first go to the mission and brief about the visit. Even if the minister is going to visit, what is going to happen, and then they normally, even before the visit, they will advise us what needs to happen, and you know, the politics of the country and other things that we may go through as science, we'll just go as science, but they kind of prepare us to see what we're supposed to expect there. And then on the involvement of us in the continent, I think the question was more on the issues of international or indigenous knowledge systems. I would say definitely other things we've lost already, so we just cannot go. It's very difficult if we talk about the intellectual property, because those people already own intellectual property. Mm-hmm. However, we are working on a number of policies, frameworks. I think you may be aware that the department tabled the what we call the IKS bill for South Africa.
Where what is that?
Intellectual knowledge systems bill. So it's indigenous knowledge. So that was tabled in Parliament to say, how do we then say how, like the knowledge producers, how they benefit from those, how we protect their IKS, you know, the knowledge, because it's more about knowledge that they have. So it's not only the medicine, but the knowledge that they have. We have what we call a recorder system, where they can record information, and that information, you know that that person owns that particular information. And also we have an office known as the National Intellectual Property Management Office. We try to say, for instance, in South Africa, how do we make sure that people know about intellectual property? When do they disclose information that they have, and what does it mean for that? How do they go about even gaining more about what they produce? So we, in South Africa, we do have that. For instance, we support institutions, for instance, to say, if they produce something out of the intellectual property that they have, how do they gain? For instance, if it's public funds, they benefit. It's the IP, we don't get involved in the government because it's a way of supporting them. But we also affiliate with a number of organizations. I think you talked about, the name of the organization. IKS.
Indigenous Knowledge System. I worked in that department of arts and as an MEC there. Yeah.
Yes. But at the continental level, we're also working on a policy, the PIPO. I don't know if you know about that. But it also deals with the intellectual property, but at the continental level. We have not agreed as member states because others belong in other organizations, but we are trying to work together on that as well. I think also there was a question about what is it that you think as the DFC we can improve on the bill. At the top of my head, I don't have anything right now. Like I said, that for us, we feel like one issue that we had identified was this issue of, especially with the secondments. I think in terms of the representative, it's very clear ahead of the mission. But in terms of the secondments, we had a problem because we were not sure, because as the government of South Africa, we're giving money to that person. So we're not sure whether who should they find an assignment with, whether with the department or with the secretariat. So it's one of the things that we're currently working on for our secondment in the secretariat.
Okay. Mrs. Stenkamp?
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to add to what Ms. Higgins was saying about the World Intellectual Property Organization, about Wi-Fi, if you would allow me.
Just bring that listen close to
Thank you very much. Noticing that it is an issue separate from the bill, I thought maybe the committee would just be interested to know. The WIPO representation for South Africa is currently coordinated through DEFCO, but the DSC plays a very important part specifically on indigenous knowledge systems. As Ms. Higgins has said, that they've piloted the legislation for South Africa, and the indigenous knowledge discussions in WIPO, there's always a technical expert from the DST part of the delegation for those discussions, and South Africa is also taking a very strong position in those discussions to promote the fact, or to argue for the fact, that countries should disclose where new intellectual property rights rely on indigenous knowledge systems. The discussion is still very much ongoing at an international level. At a domestic level, if my understanding of this bill is, if it goes through, there will be in South African law a requirement that indigenous knowledge systems that have been relied on in creating a new patent should be disclosed.
Yeah.
So the DST plays a very important role in those discussions.
Yeah. Yeah. Ivana, this thing that we were talking about earlier on, take the Chinese, for instance, they are very strong on Afro. It may be coming from thousands of years to today, and now it's a big industry for them. Things like that.
But why do you pick that out?
No, they stole our rhino horns. They stole our rhino horns.
I
Okay. You want to come back, Honourable Dudley?
Because we're walking so busy and in and out of so many meetings, we may have had the department actually speak to that issue. But I wondered if anyone in the department here would be able to just talk us through if they considered that it would affect other sort of departments,
mm-hmm.
and what the because that might be something that's coming in time. But just to give us a sense of how important our focus needs to be on that comment,
yeah.
With regard to a more or less administrative issue, really. Yeah.
Mm. Mrs. Higgins?
Anyone in the
department?
Oh, okay.
Sorry,
when I said the department, I was really meaning DERCA.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I'm not sure. Thank you for the question, but I'm not sure I completely understood what inputs.
Okay. Would you like to just repeat that?
Yeah. Okay. One of the points I made about something that made the bill make consider, I think, it's for us as the Department of Science and Technology, it wasn't clear in terms of secondment. Administrative issues, who reports to who, is it the country that has seconded or the department, or is it the mission, or is it the secretariat, for instance, who is responsible for that. So we felt that it's not clear how we do deal with it.
Thank you very much. I first of all have to emphasize that I'm not a human resources specialist for DERCO, but my understanding of how it works is there's a common policy with the Department of Public Service and Administration. DERCO, it is not the intention of DERCO to supplant this with our own policy. We've used that policy for DPSA, which applies to all of government. The secondments, in my understanding, are also not to missions. They are to other organizations. which means that the official would then, in my understanding, for that period of time, report within that organization, but obviously also report to their line function department at home. So those issues, unless it is something that is specifically linked to admission, but as a general rule, those issues are separate from postings in missions.
Okay. Mrs. Higgins, will you then send us the presentation?
Mm-hmm.
You support the bill, you're not affected by the clauses, then directed to the committee secretary. And we also want to thank you for being able to come and present to the committee. I'm happy we are proceeding apace. If next week we are able to see four departments, at least a lot of ground would have been covered regarding consultations with the departments. Yeah. Siyabonga, ne?
Thank you, Chair. I promise that I'll send the presentation.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, on item number six, because we already spoke to the program for next week,
mm-hmm.
but let me just update Honourable Bergman and Honourable Dudley. We were supposed to have a meeting on Friday, and there was only one department that was able to come. It was the Department of Labour, and they have issues, of course, with regarding their employees. Now, earlier on, when we started the meeting, we then proposed that we shift them to next week, Wednesday. And then next week, Wednesday, we have engagements with labor, with health, with transport and agriculture between the morning and 2 o'clock with lunch in between. And Parliament will sit at 3 o'clock. And then that, therefore, there will be no meeting this Friday and next Friday. And members have agreed to that. Yeah. With that, the meeting is adjourned. And thank you very much. Fatele?
Chairperson, we have to thank the members who attended last week's Friday's meeting. The full complement of the committee which we had.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it. And also, I propose that if the department, the various departments, we still have to see. If they don't have a problem with the bill, I don't see any need why they must come down here. No. I think that the secretariat can sensitize with them if they for specific issues, and then they can come down, because really, you know, just like DST, I think it's an opportunity cost to on their side, on the issue of the finances in particular. I think that we can check that beforehand and then really have to be make our job. What is secretary? I think that you must be pointed when you invite them to have this bill. What are the issues that you are having? And then
if you have come down.
Yeah, exactly.
How many departments are there?
Alright, so they want to next week. Next week. Yeah.
Yeah.
With that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much, officials from DERCO.
She was making a big issue of Stephen Mafalapa and the whole situation. So Chief Whip of the ANC said that he will cause it. What I said was that she's conflating two different issues. There were two issues. The one issue was the committee taking seriously the fact that the minister that haven't been for a while, and we were inconveniencing with us, and we were already